This is Upstate's HealthLink on air, Linda Cohen along with you. In the United States, more than 37 million people suffer from migraines. Some migraine studies estimate that 13% of adults have migraines, and 2 to 3 million migraine sufferers are chronic, causing moderate to severe disability. We'll hear with more on this as Dr. Luis Mexico, professor of neurology and ophthalmology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Mexico. Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here.
So let's begin by helping our listeners understand, what do we mean when we say migraine? What is a migraine?
So migraine is a very specific form of headache, although interesting, sometimes headache is not a part of it, but we can get to that later, so it's not too confusing. But migraine is a primary headache disorder. In other words, it's a disorder of the brain that is caused by a specific biology that many times we inherit from our parents, and that's why it runs in family as a very prevalent condition. But clearly, it's a disease that has to be tackled by itself. So in other words, trying to figure out what is the cause of migraine sometimes is not useful.
But what is actually happening in the brain to cause a migraine, and how is that different from other headaches?
So in migraine, we have studied its biology, and we understand it as several steps that are happening in the brain. We haven't figured out all the pieces of the puzzle, but clearly there is a component where, for example, the pain originates from the surface of the brain. The surface of the brain, as many people know, is called meninges, and in the meninges we have this system that is where we have blood vessels and we have specific neurons, and it's called the trigeminal vascular system, and that's where a lot of the migraine pain comes from. But then there's central networks. There's networks that go inside the brain, and there's circuits, and it gets fairly complicated. But clearly, you can view it as a cascade of events and eventually as a chemical storm in the brain. That's how I think of it.
So is there actually a swelling or an enlargement of the vessels during that time that create the symptoms?
So the blood vessels in the surface of the brain, not within the brain, vasodilate.
They get bigger.
They get bigger. And then there's release of these chemical substances that irritate the nerve endings on the surface of the brain. And that's why when people have a migraine, it's painful to walk, it's painful to cough, to laugh, to strain, because there is some irritation that is happening on the surface of the brain.
So how is it different? I mean, when we say headache in general, how is this different? I mean, a typical quote-unquote tension headache.
Yeah, so tension-type headache is the most common form of headache. It's what people refer to as common headaches. And those are headaches that usually are not disabling. People can continue to function. There's little associated symptoms beyond the headache. Migraine is different. Migraine headache tends to be described as throbbing, moderate to severe. It may be on one side of the head or both sides of the head. It gets worse with movement. It gets better with rest. And it's associated with other symptoms. People get sensitive to light, to sound. They may feel nauseous. They may even vomit. Sometimes there's other associated symptoms such as dizziness and malaise and decreased appetite. The duration of the headache is defined as a headache that lasts for several hours. And there's specific criteria for that. But let's just say that it's a headache that lasts for several hours. Some people have their headache is preceded by other symptoms.
The more they call the aura.
It's called the aura, exactly. And these are focal neurological symptoms. The most common is the visual aura, where people will see somewhere in their visual field this area that tends to be shimmering, tends to be, it expands in size, and it lasts for a few minutes, and then it's followed by the headache. Mm-hmm. Other symptoms that may precede headache symptoms is numbness or tingling in various parts of the body. And then there's a recovery phase after the migraine headache is over, where the person may feel tired or drowsy or moody. There are certainly a sort of a post-headache phase. So the entire migraine is preceded by symptoms, then it's followed by headache, and then it's followed by even other more pervasive symptoms.
So who is most at risk for this? Where do you know what are our typical migraine sufferers looking like?
So migraine sufferers tend to be women. The ratio of women to men is 3-to-1. They tend to be young adults. Migraines happen during the years of most productive productivity. However, you know, it may happen in children. It may happen in the elderly as well. But it tends to be more common in young adults.
So it can usually occur lifelong.
Yes, I mean, migraine certainly can transform itself over the years, sometimes presenting in childhood with symptoms that don't even have headaches. There are very specific syndromes that are most interesting. For example, there's a syndrome where children will have spells of vomiting, and that's all what they have. They just vomit. There are also spells where children may have dizziness and they see the room spinning and without headache. Then when they're teenagers, maybe they develop a more classical headache syndrome. And then then when they're older, they may get less headaches but more visual aura, for example.
So how do you clinically actually diagnose this? Is it just from the symptomatology?
It's just from the symptomatology and also the feature that these are episodes that repeat over time. So it's difficult sometimes to make the diagnosis based on only one or two or two episodes. But if the person gives a clear history of previous similar episodes, then the diagnosis of migraine is more certain. And then, of course, it's based on a full evaluation where we do physical exam, we look at other contributing factors. There's a whole medical evaluation that goes on.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with neurologist Dr. Luis Mejico. We're talking about migraines. People often talk about this thing called triggers, you know, because apparently there are things that will cause a migraine to occur. Many people have that experience. Tell us what they are, or what are the common ones, and, you know, how significant are they?
Right, so it is thought that we all have a threshold beyond which we can induce a migraine headache, a migraine-like headache, even on somebody who's never had a headache.
Really?
People with migraine, however, will have a much lower threshold. So I usually like to think as triggers, as things that push you closer to that threshold. So it tends to be multifactorial. So there's a weather storm that is coming. And then I am stressed because of this and that, and I didn't sleep well last night, and then I had a glass of wine. And that all this accumulation of triggers push me over that threshold. Other people, however, may have very, very specific triggers that will throw them over that edge, over the threshold, very rapidly. And it is not known what percentage of people it is like that, but some people will tell you, if I have a glass of red wine, of white wine, something very specific.
I'm one of those people.
Okay. Or, yes. And if you identify that, then you know to stay away from it.
Exactly.
It's more difficult for the person who has multifactorial elements. You cannot control the weather unless you move to somewhere else.
Right.
But, you know, you may be able to control that glass of alcohol, for example.
Right. So it's important to know those triggers for the individual. That actually leads me into this whole concept of treatment or what you can do about it. Because obviously it can be a very disabling condition, especially for some people who have them chronically, regularly, etc. Because it's as a migraine sufferer myself, I will say they're painful, quite painful. So I thought we'd start with kind of behavioral things that the patient themselves can do. What are the kinds of things you recommend?
Exactly, and those are very, very important points. Migraine can be extremely disabling, and severe form of migraines have been, considered, for example, by the World Health Organization as being as severe as being quadriplegic. So spinal cord injuries has been a comparison. Thank God not everybody will have severe migraines, but behavioral treatment is extremely important. It's understanding the relationship between triggers and your migraine headaches. Is also understanding where you are in relationship to that threshold. So if you are having a rough week, that may be the time again to try to control your environment better. When it comes to behavioral treatment for migraine, it's very important the word regular. You want to have regular meals at regular times, regular exercise, regular sleep, and regular is like the key word here, which is difficult sometimes. We all have busy lives, we all have things to do, and we may skip a meal and we get a headache.
Or lose sleep or whatever for any number of reasons.
Absolutely.
Right. So that's key. So that's actually empowering the patient to at least have some things they can do. So then how about preventive treatment? Because that's of late become much more well understood, I think, we've had the idea of treating symptoms, which I will get to in a minute in terms of medications and what have you. But there are preventive treatments now that are more available for people, especially those who suffer regular migraine headaches.
That's right. And that's a main criteria is when people are having migraine headaches often. And arbitrarily, we have drawn the line, people that have more than 3 or 4 headaches a month that are disabling, then those people certainly qualify for preventive treatment. Preventive treatment, we are talking about medications, taking something on a daily basis. And the main purpose of the preventive medicine is to make the headaches less frequent, less severe, and lasting less.
So what kinds of medications are most effective, been shown to be most effective?
Right, so we borrow medications primarily from other family of drugs. We borrow medication from anti-seizure family. We borrow medications from anti-blood pressure family and also antidepressants. Those are the main three groups. Then we have a miscellaneous group that also include even over-the-counter agent. There are some minerals, some vitamins, some herbal supplements that have been shown to have some effect on prevention of migraine headaches.
What have you seen to be most effective in terms of medications in your own experience clinically?
So probably the most effective oral medication that we have for prevention of migraine is a drug called topiramate. And topiramate is a medication from the anti-epilepsy group, anti-seizure family. We also have medications that are antidepressants. There's an older family of medication that's called the tricyclic antidepressants that we sometimes use. Now, a very important point about this preventive medicine is that we use low doses. We always start with extremely low doses. So we are not aiming at doses that are used for epilepsy or for hypertension. Always low doses first.
Okay, and then you kind of, it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. It's a little trial and error with the individual patient.
Absolutely.
All right, quickly, in the very little time we have left, what's the most effective treatment for the actual painful symptoms?
So, moderate range migraine can be treated with over-the-counter pain medications, such as ibuprofen, and there's some literature behind those. However, severe migraine headaches are best treated with specific migraine killers, as I call them, instead of painkillers, migraine killers. And we are talking about a family of drugs called triptans, T-R-I-P-T-A-N, triptans. And there's several forms available. And again, there's not one that is better than another one, but they have some specific differences between them and we choose depending on the circumstances.
So do you recommend people come to a neurologist when they have a debilitating issue with migraines?
Well, I believe that care should start with their family practitioner. The general practitioner many times can solve a problem such as migraine. And that person has the best judgment to refer to a neurologist
when when it's necessary.
Exactly.
This has been incredibly enlightening. And as a migraine sufferer, I thank you for it. Very good information. Thank you so much. My guest has been Dr. Luis Mejico, Professor of Neurology and Ophthalmology at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.